I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
I'm Kate Thornton. Join me every week on White Wine Question Time, the podcast that asks famous faces three thought-provoking questions over three glasses of wine.
It's very rare to be introduced with such a thorough introduction, and it's kind of lovely to listen to all that and go, yeah, I've had a good life, right?
You really have.
How did you find that?
I can't even remember.
Yeah.
You do your research, Kate, man. I'll tell you that.
Do you know what? You are the only person ever, no other journalist has ever made that connection.
Wow, what a great question.
And receives some truly memorable answers.
And Tom Cruise came, and Nicole Kidman. I go to him, listen, before you go, Tom, I just want you to know, if you fancy a foursome, I'm up for it, and I know Anne-Marie doesn't mind.
First dated my now husband, I joined a gym for, I'm going to say, £1,000 a year, just so I could go off and have a poo.
I got heckled once in Wales, and there was a bloke at the bar on crutches, and he actually said to me, I'd rather fall over than listen to this shit, and he threw his crutches at me and fell over. Can you believe that?
I've got some cat's ashes, I don't know who they are.
You've been catfished by your own cat.
Exactly, seriously, man.
Dad, have you thought about putting in a breakfast nook? My dad would say something like, have you thought about getting your own fucking house?
How did you give a duck an orgasm, Craig?
It's good with them, you know.
I know my way around a duck.
So, if you fancy a sit-down with the likes of Adam Hills, Tom Allen, Hannah Waddingham, Phil Tufnell, James Acaster and Ed Gamble, Daisy May Cooper, and tons more, then join me every Tuesday and Friday. Search White Wine Question Time in your podcast app to subscribe and listen now. White Wine Question Time is a Stack production.
Hello and welcome to Eureka, the show that gets under the skin of science as we invite a new expert every week to help us answer one of science's most interesting questions. Isaac Asimov once said the most exciting phrase in science is not Eureka, but that's funny. And what we think is you can have a bit of both. I'm Rick Edwards.
And I'm Dr. Michael Brooks.
So we're doing sleep this week. Interesting question. Can't help but think maybe it's a breakfast presenter who's getting up at 5 a.m. and looking for some answers.
I wish I was getting up at 5 a.m. Do you know what time my alarm goes off every day?
Go on.
3:45 a.m.
Oh!
That's, to me, I don't even think that's the morning.
It's not. It almost makes me want to set an alarm for 3:45 just to wake up and think, Rick has to get up
and
now.
And go back to sleep.
And go back to sleep. Which I wouldn't, obviously, which I'd then lie awake, so I'm not going to do that.
So do that. Yeah. And then toss and turn and be furious. It's horrible. I'd sort of assumed that I'd get used to it. And there's no sign of that yet. I'm sort of
really?
I'm 4 months in.
Yeah, that's long enough, isn't it, that you should be sort of habituated now.
But the start of the week is always absolutely horrendous.
And what's Friday like?
Friday's, it gets better through the week because basically I just get more and more knackered.
Yeah.
And so it is easier to sleep.
Right.
Earlier.
And then Saturday?
Well, then Saturday's a mess because I'm trying to sort of have a normal life at the weekend. But we'll talk about all of this, but my rhythms are sort of set to something awful during the week and then I try and reset back to normal, and then I've got to go back to the awful, and it just, you know, my body doesn't know what's going on.
I'm weeping for you, Rick.
The only thing my body knows is it doesn't like it.
Yeah.
It hates it. Some of us count sheep. Some of us use meditation apps.
So just lying down, we're going to focus the attention on the different parts of the body.
Some of us listen to a boring podcast, like Infinite Monkey Cage, say. But getting to sleep isn't always easy. And unfortunately, as I've been learning the hard way recently, it is essential. It's as important to our bodies as eating, drinking and breathing, and is vital for maintaining good mental and physical health. It offers the body a chance to recover from the wear and tear of daily life. It facilitates learning and memory and plays a fundamental role in immune function.
The reason I like sleep is because if you can get 1 hour more, it dramatically affects cancer rates, high blood pressure rates. Listen, 30% less chance of being hypertensive if you get one extra hour of sleep. Hypertension is the number one ager of all.
Yet even if we acknowledge the importance of sleep and we want to drift off each night for a full 8 hours, many of us can't. An increasing number of us, in fact, myself included, which is why we're asking today's question. Please, for the love of God,
how could I get myself to sleep?
So who have we got to answer what seems to be life's most important question?
To me, it's definitely life's most important question. I don't know if it generally is. But today we chatted to the extremely insightful Dr. Maya Shadell. Dr. Maya is a clinical psychologist. She's got a specialism in insomnia, sleep difficulties and trauma. She currently holds an NHS position in the Sleep Disorder Centre. My little ears pricked up at that, I'll tell you. At Guy's and St Thomas's NHS Foundation Trust. That's one of the UK's leading sleep medicine centres. She's also one of the doctors at the Good Sleep Clinic, again, my little ears pricking up, who believe that an evidence-based approach to treating insomnia is the most effective route to rediscovering good quality sleep and improved well-being.
Perfect.
It is, actually. I mean, I don't want this episode to just feel like
Rick's sort of therapy hour
project, but it is, essentially.
You don't need to listen, really. Rick's just doing this for himself.
I think it's interesting, but yes, I'm not doing this for the audience particularly. I am very interested myself. But the first thing that I put to Dr. Maya was this: why, if I know I have to be up at 3:45 a.m., which I do, is it so difficult for me to get an early night?
There's this concept that we use in sleep work, which is understanding how we build up a kind of need to sleep. We call it sleep pressure or sleep drive. And if you think of it, it's almost like a beaker of sleep fuel that builds up in the day. So as soon as you wake up in the morning, your body is producing this byproduct in the brain called adenosine, and that just builds up and builds up and builds up. And then by the end of the night, the end of the day, you should have enough adenosine that means that you're tired enough to fall asleep naturally and to stay asleep for the whole night. Now, there are certain things we need to get as much sleep fuel or sleep pressure as we can. So, for example, the more physical activity you do, that really helps build up sleep pressure. The more cognitive stimulation you have, so, you know, whether or not that's working or studying or engaging with friends, and also just being awake for long enough in the day. So if you normally wake at 7 and you go to bed at 11, if you get an early night and you go to bed at 10 o'clock, you're missing out on a key hour that you had to build up sleep fuel. So if you're missing out on that hour, that means that when you go to bed, you may just not have built up quite enough sleep pressure to fall asleep as easily as you would have done normally. And that means that you can be actually making it slightly harder for yourself to fall asleep. So there's a bit of a word of warning with the whole early night.
You're bringing it on yourself, aren't you?
Well, I don't think I am, because I'm getting up at 3:45. It's not like there's no one who's saying I'm not up for long enough. Trust me.
What time do you go to bed then?
I have to go to bed at about sort of 7:30, 8. Like a child.
Yes.
But also, I've been doing it in the winter when at least it's been dark.
And now
it's going to get increasingly
everyone
hard.
Else is just going out to the pub or something.
Yeah.
And you're going to bed.
Yeah.
Are you getting enough like cognitive stimulation?
I think that I am getting.
Physical exercise?
Yeah, even that. I think it's just I'm having to reset my circadian rhythms.
Yeah.
So let's talk a bit about the sort of the science of sleep. And the first thing, when I started reading about this, that you realise is we don't know as much as I thought that we would about sleep. It's a bit more mysterious, and there's much more research that needs to be done into it. We've got a handle on some stuff, but there's still stuff that we don't quite get. Broadly speaking, there are two factors that kind of regulate our sleep. So there's homeostatic process, which is essentially what Dr. Meyer was just talking about there, which is the longer that you're awake, the sleepier you get. And essentially that's because you're expending energy and you need a reset. And then in tandem with that, there's sort of circadian rhythms, which are more kind of clock-like, and they mean that you're just more likely to be sleepy at certain times of day. And they're related to light and darkness. Mm. And so you'll be sleepiest between, I think it's between 2 and 4 a.m., a.k.a. guess who's getting up? And also between 1 and 3. And right. So circadian just means anything that's sort of on a 24-hour.
Do you mean
cycle.
1 and 3 in the afternoon?
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, so between 1 and 3
nap
in the
time,
afternoon. Which actually, which actually explains that, you know, people often talk about food coma when you've had lunch. There might be something in that, but it's also definitely something to do with circadian rhythm, where it just happens that coincides with your after your lunchtime.
Yeah, so it's always the worst slot if you're speaking at a conference or something just after
awful.
Lunch.
Yeah.
You know I mean, and everybody's just asleep.
Everyone's asleep. You're basically asleep.
I'm talking about physics.
Yeah. Yeah, if you weren't sleepy before, wait until you get a load of this guy talking about quantum. So you've got these two factors sort of working alongside each other. And the first one, which is the homeostatic one, is all about energy and repair, effectively. And so ATP is a molecule that is people refer to it as sort of energy currency. It's just a thing that stores and transfers energy in the body. And when ATP breaks down, once it's been used, it breaks down into adenosine. And so the more energy that you use through the day, the more adenosine builds up. And what that does is it sort of induces a sleep state. And the way that it does that is it just binds to receptors in your brain, two different types of receptors. It suppresses the activity of a neuron that's like telling you to wake up and be right. active. And then it activates these kind of sleep activation neurons. So it does these two things, and it makes you want to fall asleep when you've got a certain amount of adenosine buildup in the brain. And so it's kind of a feedback mechanism, because the major function of sleep really is conserving energy, rebuilding energy stores, and repair. And then when you're sleeping, you break down the adenosine, and then the cycle just starts again.
Right, yeah. Okay.
So you've sort of got your energy, ATP levels sort of going down through the day, and as that's happening, adenosine levels are rising up, and then eventually you get the point where you need to go to sleep, and then it all just sort of resets and starts again.
Or in your case, doesn't quite reset.
Doesn't quite reset. And it's really interesting to look at what caffeine does. So caffeine is probably the most popular drug, arguably, in the West. And lots of people have a mild physical dependence on it. It's not especially good for you, but caffeine is a very similar molecule to adenosine. It's in the same family.
Okay.
And so
what
it does is it competes with adenosine to bind to these receptors.
Yeah.
It doesn't activate the receptors though. So it will bind to the second type of receptor that activates your sleep and tells you want to sleep, but it just blocks the adenosine to getting there. So you don't feel like you need to go to sleep. That's effectively what caffeine is doing. And then it also can block off binding to the other receptors, which are the ones that tell you to wake up.
Yeah.
So it's kind of interfering, ultimately, with your adenosine levels, particularly if you have caffeine before bed or whatever.
Do you find that? Because, I mean, I don't know whether you use a lot of caffeine. I drink a lot of coffee.
I think I've become
a little bit immune to its effects now, except if I try to not drink coffee when I get the most hideous headache.
Yeah, I get a headache.
So I've got that mild dependency for sure, but it doesn't kick me into any kind of, you know, people talk about getting the jitters if they have too much caffeine. It's just, I literally can't go through a day without having, you know, enough.
Yeah, no, I'm exactly the same. I think we've both got a mild dependence. I also think it's not really having much of an effect, because what your brain is doing is actually just developing more receptors. That's its response to it.
Bastard brain.
Yeah, so you can't get around it. But what's really interesting is that if you think about taking a load of, drinking a load of coffee or whatever, taking in caffeine before you go to bed, and that blocks adenosine from binding to receptors. So you've got a load of adenosine sort of floating around, more than you would normally have.
Yeah.
And when you're asleep, you don't get rid of it all. So when you wake up, you feel more groggy and you still feel tired because you've got a surplus of adenosine. And then what you do is you drink more caffeine, and then you're in this horrible sort of downward spiral.
That is my life.
Yeah. Because you're...
I need to cut down on coffee.
Yeah, yeah, but you don't want to go cold turkey. No. You do it gradually, ideally.
Yeah. I mean, it's not going to happen. I've been saying this for 20 years now, so, you know.
Yeah, I think you probably just accept. But yeah, I was horrified. The first time I can't remember why it was, but I didn't have caffeine for a few days, and I was getting these awful headaches.
Yeah.
And I had no idea, because I used to just drink a lot of tea, but tea has a fair amount of caffeine in it as well.
Yeah.
Yeah, nasty business. And caffeine, you know, outside of the brain, isn't particularly good for you either. So it increases dehydration, it increases your heart rate, does inhibit hunger hormones, apparently, which adenosine also does. So it can make you less hungry, which is why some people will almost have it, that kind of awful, like, stick-thin Parisian model vibe of just have cigarettes and coffee.
Yeah.
That there is some basis.
It's like you're describing my look today, by the way.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, you are wearing a sort of Breton t-shirt, yeah, but that is, I think, where it stops. So if we actually look at sleep itself, there's a sleep cycle. So there's four stages, and you cycle through those four stages a number of times every night. And so the first stage is your heart rate is decreasing, your breathing rate is decreasing, your muscles are relaxing. You might be a little bit twitchy. You probably recognize that. That's the feeling of when you're falling asleep initially.
Right.
And then the second stage of sleep, your body temperature has fallen even further. Your heart rate is right down. Breathing rate is right down. And then the third stage is deep sleep. And this is where eye movement stops. And this is a key part of when your body is repairing and DNA is being repaired through the body. Then you go into REM sleep, which is rapid eye movement. This is when you'll be dreaming. Your breathing rate increases, heart rate increases, blood pressure is quite similar to when you're waking, actually. And this is what's called sort of active sleep.
Yeah, yeah.
And then you just go back through the cycle again. That's a kind of healthy
sleep cycle.
I think so. She definitely sort of twitches sometimes.
Yeah. And we sometimes see Raffi like asleep on the sofa, and she's just going through like a whole, like, clearly on a rabbit hunt in a dream or something.
Mm.
And you're like almost like scurrying paws, but just like lying on her side doing nothing.
But do you think it's
incredible
that,
to watch?
Or she's in sort of stage one sleep where her muscles are just twitching a bit?
No, she, I mean, you can recognize the movements literally as like, you know, sort of digging away or something like that. She's definitely in hunting mode. All right, so for all your sleep problems, though, you're not one of the people we describe as an insomniac, are you?
No. So insomnia is a much more serious condition. Like, loads of people have sleep problems. That's incredibly common, actually. I think 30% of the sort of general population have some kind of sleep issue. But insomnia is worse, and I actually asked Dr. Meyer to define it and explain it to us.
Insomnia is when you either struggle to fall asleep or you struggle to stay asleep for three nights a week over the course of 3 months. That's the kind of clinical definition. But we find that actually people have insomnia at various points in their life. One of the things that people find with insomnia is that although there may have been an initial trigger to why they didn't sleep very well, so we may all know what it's like that if you're stressed about an exam or maybe a job interview or something you're doing the next day, that could impact on your sleep, and that's a really, really normal occurrence. We wouldn't think of that as an issue. But what tends to happen with insomnia is that over time, we start to then worry about the not sleeping. Like, actually, then you start to develop a fear of not falling asleep easily. So you might get into bed and you might start to feel anxious, and you might start to feel worried that I'm not going to sleep, and then I'm going to be really tired tomorrow and I won't be on form. And that worry in itself then becomes the problem. And then that's what then sort of perpetuates the whole thing. It just keeps it going. And so people can end up with insomnia that lasts for months and years. So I see people with a range of insomnia. Sometimes people are struggling to sleep just for a few months, but I see people who've struggled to sleep for most of their lives. And that's just totally devastating and disabling. So people, understandably, are completely exhausted and tired of the whole thing.
To me, that's absolute torture. You know, I love the idea of just going to sleep and sleeping through the night. And yeah, it's kind of one of the best things that ever happens to you, isn't it?
Yeah, and it's really good for you. Like, you really do need sleep. And interestingly, you mention torture, because you will be fairly unsurprised, I think, to hear that even in the wake of kind of trying to address the various ethical problems of their advanced interrogation techniques,
right.
The US government they still use sleep deprivation. So they've got rid of a lot of like the waterboarding and stuff, but sleep deprivation is still, that's still in. So that's, I think, what they've agreed on is you have to let a prisoner have 4 hours sleep every 24 hours, but they don't need more than that. So you can keep them awake for 20 hours. And that is, given that adults need between 7 and 8 hours sleep, that everyone pretty much.
And that's how you break someone.
Yeah. Yeah. Because they're gradually going to deteriorate. Horrible.
Yeah.
Really, really horrible.
Yeah.
And actually,
that must happen to people, again, who are just insomniacs.
Yeah, you don't need to be in Guantanamo for that to happen.
Exactly.
You probably feel like you're in Guantanamo.
Yeah.
But the negative impacts of not getting any sleep and insomnia are so far-reaching and far-ranging. Like, it's horrible. So it increases your risk of stroke, illness generally. It can even kill you. Ultimately, it can affect your hormone balance. It affects learning, your capacity to learn. It affects your memory. It affects your mood. It affects your reaction time. All of this stuff that you probably just instinctively know, because if you don't get a good night's sleep for some reason, you feel sluggish and you know, like you just nothing's quite. You feel like you're in a bit of a fog.
Yeah, you're not on it, are you?
Effectively,
yeah.
It could increase inflammation. You can start hallucinating. It increases your blood pressure. It's been linked to diabetes. It's been linked to obesity. It's really
great.
Like, it's really
okay.
it's awful. The other thing about insomnia is it's also associated with other sort of diagnosable psychiatric disorders, particularly depression and anxiety. So if you look at the sort of in the general population, maybe 16%, which is still quite high, of people will have some form of psychological disorder. In insomniacs, it's 40%. And so, yeah, depression is the main one. And when people look at it sort of across the board, it seems to decrease your quality of life on virtually every dimension.
Yeah.
So you'll experience more pain, your general health will be less good, your vitality, sort of self-reported, will be worse, your social functioning is worse, your mental health is worse. So across anything, sort of emotional, physical, social, your job performance will be worse, you'll probably miss more work, you're more prone to accidents. Like, it's just that, like, you just are functioning badly on pretty much every metric you care to choose. And the worst possible case, and I don't know why I'm laughing, really, I genuinely shouldn't be, is called fatal familial insomnia. And this is genetic, and it's just you have an abnormal variant of it's one of these prion-related genes.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And it's incurable, and it just leads to permanent wakefulness. You cannot sleep, and it leads to dementia and ultimately death.
Wow.
Yeah.
Is that common?
No, it's not.
Thankfully.
But if you've got it, you've got it.
And you're passing it on?
Probably, yeah.
Yikes.
Yeah. Not good.
So this has all gone quite dark.
It just is quite dark.
I mean, ironically.
It's making me feel slightly better about the fact that, you know, I'm not getting as much sleep as I'd like.
Yeah, I mean, I hope we're not keeping anyone awake with this this episode. I mean, I don't have a huge problem sleeping. I fall asleep really easily. Sometimes if I've got a lot on my mind, I wake up sort of at 4 a.m. or something. And then, you know, if I've been awake a while, then I'll just get up and read and then I'll go back to sleep again and it'll be fine. Mm-hmm. Are there quick fixes that we can offer our listeners?
Well, we did ask Dr. Meyer about one very interesting piece of research.
There was a study back in 2019 that looked at this, although having said that, it was a self-report study. So this is not something that's been measured in the lab from what I can see, although I might have missed one. But generally, people do report that they sleep better and they fall asleep quicker if they have either masturbated or they have had sex that's led to orgasm. And the orgasm is the important part, apparently, for both partners. So generally, sleep gets better if both partners have orgasm. That's definitely something that came out of that study. And masturbation was also seen to be helpful as well. It's not something that we prescribe, but we definitely do talk to people when they ask us, you know, and they say that actually I feel really relaxed after I have sex, that really helps, then of course that's going to help. There is also, we think there might be something to do with the fact that, you know, during sex your heart rate is up, and as soon as you stop having sex you have this kind of really quick deceleration of your heart rate, and that's likely to be helpful. It also is likely to be helpful because of your muscles relaxing afterwards, which is what we need. But I imagine that there's something that's a bit more difficult to measure, which might be about the psychological impact of sex, which is about often people feel closer together, they feel that they have connected with someone, and I imagine that that feeling in itself is likely to contribute to why people find that they fall asleep quicker and that they have a better sleep, that they might just be feeling generally more relaxed and happy in themselves and in their relationship.
So,
so you've been married.
To unpick here.
You've been married a few years now, Rick. Is everything all right? You know.
Well, the key thing here is, of course, I am living up in Manchester during the week on my own. So the only conclusion is I am going to be wanking myself silly every night. In the name of science.
Strangely, lube sales in Manchester have gone through the roof.
When Dr. Meyer said we don't prescribe it, all I heard was, that is what I'm prescribing. but it's sort of like, it makes sense because anecdotally, like the cliche is when men have sex,
as soon as they finish, they
roll over and they go to sleep.
Yeah. Obviously not in, I mean, not in our case.
No, I think I might do. But there's not, when these studies that have looked at it, there's actually not a, there's not a gender difference. So my take on this is probably, I mean, it's awful. It's probably just that when men have sex, almost every time they will orgasm, and that's not the case for women.
That would probably make sense, actually.
Yeah. But ultimately, it's the orgasm that is key. It doesn't really matter
how
you get there.
Good to know.
It's very interesting for me to know that, actually. and there's some other...
I'm going to text you at 5 to 8 and just put you off every night.
Oh, don't do that. Text me a photo of your horrible face. But yeah, it's interesting. It's interesting. I'll definitely... I'll look into it, won't I? There's some other quite funny studies around your sleeping companions. I think this is self-reported. So, you know, self-reported stuff, you always have to, you bear in mind, it's not as rigorous as it might be.
Yeah, people can brag.
Yeah, people can brag. People can sort of say what they think you want to hear, right, kind of stuff. Yeah. But anyway, they spoke to, I think it was nearly 1,000 women, and it turns out that their preferred bedfellow would be a dog. So they feel like a dog is a better sort of sleeping companion than a man. I reckon it's because dogs are just sort of they'll sleep when you sleep. They're not gonna be keeping different hours to you particularly. If you're going to sleep, then the dog is happy to do that. Whereas if you think about your human partner, they might get to bed later than you. They might be getting up earlier than you. So it's just a bit more disruptive. They might be thrashing around more,
snoring louder.
Although I think dogs probably snore.
They do a little bit, but not like I can.
No, sure. Cats also not as good. So it's definitely dogs. So dogs are the preferred sleep companion.
I wonder if there's an element of feeling safe and protected as well.
Possibly.
Because you're not going to get that from a cow, are you?
Not really.
Burger comes in, the cat's just like, I'm out. Yeah.
Well, no, the cats are not doing anything. The cat's just sort of sitting there and watching. It's not even vaguely phased. Like, well, I don't have any belongings, so take what you want. If he takes my food bowl, there's going to be trouble. But apart from that.
Okay, we'll take a quick break now, but we'll be back after this to discuss how technology might be changing the way we sleep, whether taking hormone supplements can help with your sleep cycle, and of course we'll be hearing Dr. Maya Shadell's answer to this week's question, how can I get myself to sleep?
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
I'm Kate Thornton. Join me every week on White Wine Question Time, the podcast that asks famous faces three thought-provoking questions over three glasses of wine.
It's very rare to be introduced with such a thorough introduction, and it's kind of lovely to listen to all that and go, yeah, I've had a good life, right?
You really have.
How did you find that? I can't even remember. Yeah.
You do your research, Kate, man. I'll tell you that.
Do you know what? You are the only person ever, no other journalist has ever made that connection.
Wow, what a great question.
And receives some truly memorable answers.
And Tom Cruise came, and Nicole Kidman. I go to him, listen, before you go, Tom, I just want you to know, if you fancy a foursome, I'm up for it, and I know Anne-Marie doesn't mind.
When I first dated my now husband, I joined a gym for, I'm going to say, £1,000 a year, just so I could go off and have a poo.
Actually, I got heckled once in Wales, and there was a bloke at the bar on crutches, and he actually said to me, I'd rather fall over than listen to this shit, and he threw his crutches at me and fell over. Can you believe that?
I've got some cat's ashes, I don't know who they are.
You've been catfished by your own cat.
Exactly, seriously, man.
Dad, have you thought about putting in a breakfast nook? My dad would think of that. Have you thought about getting your own fucking house?
How did you give a duck an orgasm, Craig?
It's good with them, you know. I know my way around a duck.
So, if you fancy a sit-down with the likes of Adam Hills, Tom Allen, Hannah Waddingham, Phil Tufnell, James Acaster and Ed Gamble, Daisy May Cooper, and tons more, then join me every Tuesday and Friday. Search White Wine Question Time in your podcast app to subscribe and listen now. White Wine Question Time is a Stack production.
All right, so masturbatory tools aside, mm-hmm. are there any exciting technologies that are going to help us to sleep?
Well, that's a question that we put to Dr. Maya. Can we supplement ourselves or use some kind of technology to aid the sleep process?
I've actually found that the increase in technology has actually made sleep worse. So I would say that I'm yet to find something that doesn't make me actually slightly nervous. So I would say the first thing that people often say when they come to the clinic room is, I've been wearing this tracker and I've seen that I'm not getting a really good deep sleep that I need to be getting, and it's really worrying me, and now I really want to improve on my deep sleep. And I would say, were you sleeping all right before the tracker? And they'd say, yeah, okay, yeah, not bad. And actually, I'd suggest that the tracker, I think, sometimes makes people more anxious and more focused on sleep when, and that can be a bad thing sometimes. So I do think that there's a real warning about technology actually with sleep. The problem is that, like I said, sleep is as much a psychological issue as it is a physiological issue. So whereas people are really trying to find a physical problem with their sleep, why is it that I'm sleeping like this? Is it because there's something physically wrong with my body? I would say that just so much of the time there is a psychology, it's to do with our psychology. And so if you put a tracking device on your wrist, that then when you check in the morning, it says actually you didn't sleep as well as you thought. Of course, that's going to fill us with anxiety and worry and disappointment and frustration. So I would say that I'm not yet finding technology that helpful with insomnia. In terms of the supplements, we get asked that a lot. And I would say that there's still really ropey evidence with a lot of the supplements. So I wouldn't be recommending it, and I wouldn't be recommending them anyway. Sometimes people ask about CBD, and I would say again, there's evidence that's coming out that might suggest that in the future that might be something that people consider because it might be improving anxiety. But I would, to be honest, I wouldn't be recommending that now because the evidence is just not there, and there needs to be so much more. And also, you know, I'm a psychologist, so I'm very much focused on how we can improve our thinking and our behavior to help us sleep.
Well, so this is great news for me because Philippa is obsessed with tracking her sleep with a Fitbit every morning. Almost, it's like, oh, 87, could do better. It's like it's a competition, right? And Millie's got one as well. So it's like, you know, sometimes they're texting each other saying, how well did you sleep? Well, I got a 91. It's like, it's not a competition, is it?
But if, I mean, yeah, the question is, does it help? Like, if it was helping, great. But I suspect that
No, it's literally just tracking it, isn't it? Think, oh, I didn't sleep that well last night. Must try harder tonight.
Yeah, or just making you anxious.
Yeah.
Because you think you haven't got... You kind of wake up and feel okay that you look at your sleep tracker and it says, actually, you didn't sleep very well. And you're like, oh, for fuck's sake.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Yeah. I get that quite a few mornings. It's like, oh, no, it's all gone wrong. It's like, how do you feel, though?
How do you feel before you look at the tracker? So what I've been doing the 4 months I've been getting up at 3:45 a.m. is taking melatonin. Oh. And entirely self-prescribed. I just sort of thought, I reckon I know enough about this that this will help.
Yeah.
And so what melatonin's role, melatonin's naturally occurring.
It's not like you to think you know enough about this. No, medical issue to just sort yourself out.
It's classic. So melatonin is naturally occurring. And it is involved in the circadian rhythms, and effectively you build up more and more melatonin as there's less and less light, and it's all controlled by this tiny little bit of the brain called the suprachiasmatic nucleus, which I'll be honest, I had never heard of, and it controls the level of production of melatonin, and it's sensitive to darkness and light signals.
Yeah,
And it's cited regularly as a regulator of your circadian rhythms, produced by a gland in the brain. And so you get to a certain level, and like I say, it's working alongside adenosine and other processes that we're not quite so familiar with, I think. And its levels just rise until you get to a point in the evening when it's time to sleep, and then it sort of will peak in the early hours, so when it's been dark for a long time, and then gradually it declines in daylight. And so I thought, okay, well, I'm trying to change my circadian rhythm, so I'll do that by kind of jump-starting it with some melatonin tablets. So I take one dose of melatonin. This is a great thing. There's a whole, you can, when I go on the site that I get it from, there's like five different strengths that you can take dosages. And I'm just like, I have got no idea. So I'm just picking one at random. I've just gone in the middle. No idea.
Tempted to try other doses, like go up?
I did. But then I'm sure it's so psychosomatic.
Yeah.
I'm sure it is because, when I have tried the weaker one, I was like, well, no, I don't feel as sleepy. I mean, is that right? I just don't know. And then I did some reading about it, some people have looked across like 35 randomized control trials, which is a decent number, and they can only see a very, very weak recommendation for using melatonin like that. And it seemed to work a little bit for jet lag,
Yeah.
Which again is sort of resetting your right. phase of your sleep cycle, I suppose. It can improve insomnia a little bit, and it can help with initiating sleep, which is actually what I need it for. But it says very weak, and they won't give any recommendations for use in shift workers, which would have been what I thought. This is sort of what I am, really, because I'm trying to go from one pattern to another pattern for a little while, and back to the other pattern.
I have to say, I mean, I've used melatonin a few times. Well, yeah, a few times for jet lag, and I never found it really did anything. And then you suggested I use it, you know, when I broke my arm and I couldn't sleep because of the pain. Yeah. And
I push it on everyone.
and you were selling me a markup, I find out, as well.
Yeah, so, that's right,
But again, didn't really do anything for me at all. So maybe I'm just not using the right dose, I don't know. But
I did an experiment this week, having done my reading and found out that the evidence for melatonin use was weak at best, and just stopped. Just stop using it. Also, the other thing is, you can, like with anything, your brain just adapts. Your brain adapts to everything. So if you would just keep taking melatonin, it just gets used to that. And so then you would probably, if I was properly prescribing it, which I'm not, I'd probably need to be upping my dosage, and I don't want to be doing that. So I just stopped taking it. Hasn't made a blind bit of difference.
Oh, I think we have our result, ladies and gentlemen.
Yeah. So I think that's it. I'm not going to take melatonin anymore.
Yeah. I mean, even when you know you've stopped taking it, so there's kind of a placebo effect there. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
All right. So there's basically no way of cheating our psychology with tech or with supplements.
Not really, no. And there's so much, there are so many supplements out there. There was one, I was just looking online, and most of them, in fairness, supplement regulation, I think in this country is a bit better, but in America, it's an absolute free-for-all.
Yeah.
So in America...
Land of the free.
I mean, their drug regulations aren't great, but their supplements, they're not judged by the drug criteria. They're judged like foodstuffs. To get a supplement taken off the shelves in America, you have to prove that it's dangerous, as opposed to the company coming in and saying we've proved that this is safe.
So they can make claims.
They can make claims,
and as long as it's not killing anyone, you're basically fine.
Yeah, and there's lots of examples where the whatever the name of the product is isn't actually in there. Like it really feels like the Wild West. And that's exactly the kind of sites that I'm getting my melatonin from. but there was one that really caught my eye. I just thought I'd read out its name to you. So this will cost you about £10, I think. Or you can buy it in bulk. And it's called Super Strong Melatonin Weight Loss Products, Fat Burner Sleeping Pills, Burn Flat, Fat Slim, and Reduce Appetite, Night Beauty Health. And I saw
that. We have got you covered.
And I immediately thought of you. I was like, I think Brooks could do with this. but as you know, because it's such a big issue, because 30% of certainly in America, and I think it's like general population, have some kind of sleep impediment, sleep deprivation, not to the extent of insomnia, but it's really on people's minds. People know that it makes them feel bad. So people are out there looking for ways to try and to try and help themselves.
And we get told, don't we, that, you know, if you sleep better, you live longer, you know, so, and everybody wants that. So it's like, you know, sleep is everything.
Yeah, I'm not sure about that. I'm happy with not living longer. I just want to be well rested when I am alive. that's my thing.
I want to go to my coffin without bags under my eyes.
Yeah, right. Yeah, well, I want to look good in the coffin. And that, frankly, is feeling unlikely at the moment. So I finished off by asking Dr. Meyer, how can I get myself to sleep?
The thing that I usually tell people to do is to increase their physical activity. So actually exercising more or moving around more has a massive impact on your sleep. And this is why the pandemic was so difficult for people's sleep, because whereas we'd normally be walking to the bus stop or the train or walking up a flight of stairs to get to the office, we were then going just back and forth from our study to our kitchen, and that had a massive impact on our sleep pressure. So I would always say to increase on our physical activity.
So what Dr. Meyer is really talking about there is quite
I think it's quite common sense stuff. There was this movement called sleep hygiene.
Yeah, yeah.
I think started in the sort of 60s and 70s, and it was to treat insomnia. And to be fair, there's very limited evidence that it works to treat insomnia, because insomnia is a much more serious condition. And actually, if you are an insomniac and you're listening, you want to get CBT specifically for insomnia. That appears to work.
Yeah, okay.
So cognitive behavioural therapy, that's the thing to do. Sleep hygiene, probably not going to help you. But it's all, to me, I'm just like, it's really obvious stuff. And it does help if you're just having sort of minor sleep issues. But it's things like, as Dr. Meyer was saying, just exercise regularly. So use up, I mean, you literally think about what we were talking about right at the start about adenosine. Use up more energy, produce more adenosine, and gradually you will get to a level where you will be tired and you want to get to sleep. Then, like, make sure that your bedroom is quiet and really dark. And don't use your bed for anything except sleeping, and then obviously for me, wanking. Or if you prefer, if you live with someone, then sex, by all means.
What about phones? Do you have a phone in the bedroom? You must do.
Yes, I do, but I have a setting on my phone, so it switches from sort of a lot of blue light to, I guess, yellowy light.
Yeah.
Because blue light, again, interferes with your melatonin production, which you've probably heard.
Does that affect watching the porn or not?
Well, actually, do you know what? Interesting fact about me. I can't really get on with porn. I don't know. I mean, this is not really a time to have the discussion. But
it really isn't. Yeah, yeah.
I find I spend too much time thinking about the sort of the misery of the people who are doing it. For some reason, I don't find that a turn on.
You can get ethical porn, you know.
Yeah, that's interesting. Maybe I should try that.
Yeah.
The stuff that I've seen definitely doesn't feel ethical. I tell you what I do have that I think is good, but I don't know, is one of those Lumi clocks. Have you seen those?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So kind of gradually, so when I go to sleep, it gradually sort of dims down. And then about half an hour before my alarm goes, it's like a mini sunrise.
Yeah, yeah.
And I think it would make sense if that's working, because that would be stimulating melatonin production or stopping melatonin production. So that seems to be waking me up a bit more smoothly. I don't feel as awful. So when I occasionally am not in Manchester and I don't have that clock and I have to wake up at the same time doing the show in London, I think I do feel worse, I think.
So you're going to have to start bringing it home to London at the weekend.
Or buy another one of these bloody clocks. avoiding caffeine before you go to sleep. I mean, that's fairly obvious. Avoiding nicotine, avoiding alcohol, managing your stress. It's all sort of like, do you know what I mean? These do feel like very obvious things. Regulating your sleep times. So as in when you go to sleep and when you wake up, if you can kind of fix those, that's helpful. It used to be said you want to avoid naps, but it doesn't appear to be much evidence.
Never avoid naps is my advice.
That's a problem.
I mean, if you need a nap, have a nap. I mean, that's how I've always felt.
Yeah, well, you're a free spirit, aren't you? And also you don't really do very much work, so it's an available option. But there's not that much sort of conclusive research done about sleep hygiene, but it seems to work a bit. And if you can do just some of them, it will probably help you. But there's a lot of, the thing is that they need to do more research, because a lot of it is stuff where you're extrapolating from sleep disruption studies. So like, you know, does having caffeine immediately before you try and go to sleep disrupt your sleep? Yes. To then saying, oh, okay, is that a sleep hygiene recommendation? And does abstaining from caffeine improve your sleep? And that stuff we don't really know.
Yeah, yeah. So that's a great
idea.
So
there is a difference.
Right, okay.
So basically just be sensible. All the things that you suspect will help you sleep probably will.
Yeah, yeah. But definitely masturbation or sex.
Yeah, the one that I've really taken away is obviously, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, that's our big takeaway from this week.
Yeah, big takeaway. If you're going to do one thing, it's wank. Eureka is a Stack production presented by me, Rick Edwards, and Dr. Michael Brooks. The production team is Andrea Lucia Peters, Luke Moore, and Charlie Morgan. Sound designed by Katie Baxter.
Special thanks to today's expert, Dr. Maya Shadell. If you're interested in Dr. Shadell's work and would like more information about the Good Sleep Clinic, go to www.goodsleep.clinic. If you like the show, please subscribe and rate wherever you listen to your podcast. It does make a big difference. You can also find us on Twitter at EurekaPod.
Eureka is a Stack production and part of the Acast Creator Network.
I'm Kate Thornton. Join me every week on White Wine Question Time, the podcast that asks famous faces three thought-provoking questions over three glasses of wine.
It's very rare to be introduced with such a thorough introduction, and it's kind of lovely to listen to all that and go, yeah, I've had a good life, right?
You really have.
How did you find that? I can't even remember.
Yeah, you do your research, Kate, man. I'll tell you that.
Do you know what? You are the only person ever, no other journalist has ever made that connection.
Wow, what a great question.
And receives some truly memorable answers.
And Tom Cruise came and Nicole Kidman. I go to him, listen, before you go, Tom, I just want you to know, if you fancy a foursome, I'm up for it, and I know Anne-Marie doesn't mind.
When I first dated my now husband, I joined a gym for, I'm going to say, £1,000 a year, just so I could go off and have a poo.
I got heckled once in Wales, and there was a bloke at the bar on crutches, and he actually said to me, I'd rather fall over than listen to this shit, and he threw his crutches at me and fell over. Can you believe that?
I've got some cat's ashes, I don't know who they are.
You've been catfished by your own cat.
Exactly, seriously, man.
Dad, have you thought about putting in a breakfast nook? And my dad would think of that. Have you thought about getting your own fucking house?
How did you give a duck an orgasm, Craig?
It's good with them, you know. And on my way around a duck.
So, if you fancy a sit-down with the likes of Adam Hills, Tom Allen, Hannah Waddingham, Phil Tufnell, James Acaster and Ed Gamble, Daisy May Cooper, and tons more, then join me every Tuesday and Friday. Search White Wine Question Time in your podcast app to subscribe and listen now. White Wine Question Time is a Stack production.